You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 359. Hello, welcome to the Punkins Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on tonight's show, we have the young and the promising and the old and the not promising. So tonight I am joined by Staffer Sean out of wherever the hell you live, Sean. Where you live?
Out of
Chicago, Sean.
Like right outside of Chicago.
Outside of Chicago. Well, that's enough. We don't want people to triangulate your location or anything like that. So, I'm triangulated myself to my basement, but you just be, you know, somewhere in the greater Illinois area. Anyway, so Staffer Sean, our new young person, having demoted Ricky to something else. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I am doing fine right now.
Sean, I hear that your band is doing things. What things
is
your
recording.
Band doing?
We're recording right now. We started recording yesterday. We've got another band who came in and they've like done all their stuff themselves and they've got all these fancy mics and stuff. So they came down here all the way from like an hour and a half away. But like we'd played shows with them before over at their place. And they came down and they set everything up and we're working on recording. We're going to get back to that tomorrow. But today was the one day that I didn't have access to their microphones. So I was seeing if I could get those stars to align, but, I've got my equipment situation sorted out now.
You sound pretty good compared to some of the prior appearances that you've made in the podcast.
I've invested money into this. Now
I saw you have a blue snowball microphone now. I used one of those for like the first 3 or 4 years of doing the show.
It doesn't do anything about the computer fan, but
no, but that's you know, that's what can you do about that?
Replace the fan.
I'm not expecting you to go replace your whole computer just for the sake of a periodic appearance on the Punk News Podcast. That would be crazy, and I would not want you to do that. And I'm not at all disappointed that you haven't. Do you want to tell the Punk News Podcast listenership anything about your band, potentially its name, or where to find any of that, or would that allow people to further triangulate where you are?
I'm fine with disclosing that information. The band is called Breakneck, and we have a very rough demo and Bandcamp and SoundCloud because we were like originally just like recording ourselves because we like recording our practices. And I was like, well, since we don't have anything up, why don't we just take the audio out of this video and put it up on Bandcamp? So it's a terrible recording. Nothing is mixed at all, but it's something. And that's why we're working on an actual demo right now, an actual album or EP or something. We're recording songs in better quality than they were before. So
that's how you do it. So joining me also on tonight's show, the old side of the equation, the person that is not recording a cool new album with their cool band, a person that's probably, as far as I can tell, sitting around covered in garbage, trying to find the will to make it through another day, Mr. John Gentile in location unknown. Hey, John.
No, it's true. I don't record cool stuff. I just take cool stuff that's been recorded and put my name over top of it and try to associate myself with it somehow, even though all I did was put it on a format that went out of date 28 years ago.
Yeah, it's lucky that we haven't been sued into oblivion yet, all things considered. How are you, John? How are you?
I'm doing all right. I've got a meeting with the Russian government to see if I can get some damaging info against Adam White later on. So that should go pretty well. I'm excited for that meeting.
John, today, the day that we were recording this, was a particular high point in the ongoing shit show that is your government.
Yes, yes, high point. Definitely a high point.
I mean, a high point in that the flames of guilt were probably burning at a higher, you know, height.
But is it burning? Is it burning if you walk through it like you're Khaleesi and it doesn't even affect you at all? Is that burning?
I mean, if you walk into the room and you're on fire and then you announce that.
Throw gasoline on.
Yeah, like I can't even come up with an analogy about how fucking dumb this is. But wow. Anyways, yeah, this has been a day. For people that are listening to this at some point in the future, whenever we post it, today is the day that the Donald Trump Jr. Russia meeting emails were released. So, you know, it's a fun time.
I did not make up this joke, but I saw it somewhere on Twitter. Someone was like, no one has been more appropriately named ever than Donald Trump Jr., which I thought was like the funniest thing I ever read, honestly. Donald Trump. It reminded me of Donkey Kong Jr. He's not as tough as Donkey Kong. He's not as fearsome, but he's still annoying. Donkey Kong Jr., you know. So, man, I'll tell you, like, is this a comedy? Is it a tragedy? But more importantly, is there any way back from this? I really hope there is. I mean, we are living in idiocracy. Like for real, you know what I mean? For real, we are living in idiocracy.
I mean, it's making for really good Twitter, though, and that's maybe really the high point of this in my life.
Good Twitter.
Good Twitter is what the pillars of the Western world are going to burn, but hey, we're getting good Twitter out of it for a few months before we all die in the Holocaust.
6,000 years from now, like intelligent apes are like excavating. They're like, oh, we love archaeology. Oh, look at the Egyptians. Look at them inventing the modern concept of language with syllables and sentences and verbs. Look at the Romans with their medical textbooks and roads and building treatises. Oh, look at the North Americans with their hilarious Twitter accounts.
I feel like this is the second show in a row where you've talked about the Romans.
I've been going to museums a lot lately because I love I love ancient history museums. Mm. I've been to like three ancient history museums in the past 2 months.
Well, that's not really interesting to anyone listening to this show. So let's go into, I guess we're going to do the mail and then we're going to talk about some of the news. It's sort of a weird news week. Nothing gigantic, but we'll see where we get with it and what we can make of it. Anything in the mailbag before we get started?
Yes, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from The Lone Punker, who's written in before. There's one member involved with the Punk News podcast who this will surely infuriate, and I find this hilarious. Hi, podcast. I have a note for producer Greg Simpson. Like you, I'm an audio engineer and producer. I'm sure you think it's hilarious to play ridiculous songs instead of what the podcast hosts said was about to play, or to play the same song every time throughout the show. But here's the listener's perspective. It is confusing, incredibly frustrating, and not funny at all. It's like a lame dad joke that you keep imposing on the podcast. Call me crazy, but I actually want to hear the songs that the hosts have brought to the show each week. Especially now that you are marketing your professional endeavors at the end of the show, your work should reflect professionalism. I've been wanting to write in about this for several shows now, but I hoped you would just stop. Not hearing the culture abuse song at the end of the last show was the last straw. It made me, and I'm sure very many other listeners, turn off the rest of the episode, so I didn't even hear the outro or your production plug. I'm curious if the hosts know that this has been a thing? I'm trying not to be harsh, but I love the podcast and I want to hear cool music, not to be continually subjected to an unfunny recurring joke. Love you from The Lone Punker.
I honestly don't know what he's talking about.
As another listener, I actually find it hilarious, but...
I know what he's talking about. It is like 2 weeks ago we were talking about culture abuse, and I said, here's the culture abuse song, and I played an Allman Brothers song. And so I think the Lone Punker thinks that Greg is substituting different songs than the ones that we actually submit. But whenever we play wacky songs, it's usually our selection. It's not Greg. I think the other time is for April Fools, we played the same Fleetwood Mac song over and over.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That would have been annoying as a listener. Now, that's the other thing. We do things sometimes that seem very funny to us, but we don't actually consider how they sound to people that are subjected to this. I mean, should we... So let's do two things here. One, absolve Mr. Greg Simpson of any particular blame in us being annoying. The other thing I feel like we should loop into this is the harsh tweet takedown of you that we got this past week. From Bobby. So Bobby says, He tweeted me. He asked me personally if I could do something about this. He said, "Adam, when John plays songs that are 0% punk on the podcast, can we at least get a heads up that they're going to be like 10 minutes long?"
I think he's referring to the Allman Brothers track I played. I don't think anybody got the Allman Brothers joke. Sean, did you hear that episode?
I have not heard the end of it. I've listened to
it. The song is still playing. I mean, John, you do have a habit of, say, like, finding some dub song that's probably 14 minutes long and slapping it in, or...
Well, I'm not going to apologize, because I will say several other people on the podcast, and I'm not dissing them and I'm not dissing their bands, like, "Oh, I love this new band. Spiky haired Jim and the Toilet Gang," and it's like some 3-minute punk banger that we've all heard a million times before, just with different lyrics. So I will not apologize for playing the far out tunes, and I'm a big fan of Lone Punk. I like when the Lone Punker runs in, but I will not apologize for playing wacky hijink songs either, such as the time when I played the Allman Brothers instead of Culture Abuse. I don't feel like anybody got that joke.
As a Canadian, I reflexively apologize for whatever wrongs the Punk News Podcast has done to any of you fine people that subscribe to it. So I'll give you that.
It comes down to our lack of planning, because I used to like a week ahead of time, "Oh, I'm going to play this song in the podcast." But anymore, like, I've just been so busy, I haven't like really given it any thought. And so when they say, "John, what song are you going to play?" I like think of it right there. And with the Culture Abuse, I was like, "Oh, I'm just going to diss on Culture Abuse again and play the Allman Brothers." But listen, Lone Punker, I'm not going to promise to take it seriously all the time, but I will try to take it, the song selection, seriously, at least more often, because if anything, I am heartened by the fact that people do appreciate the music that we play and do get turned on to the new music that we play, or old music that they might not know about. That's kind of cool, don't you think, Adam?
Yeah, I do. Actually, that's the one part of the show that we don't really experience ourselves. I mean, now I don't actually listen to our podcast, so I certainly don't experience it. But when we, I mean, this isn't really revealing anything, but when we say we're playing a song, like, we're not just sitting around listening to the song. We just, you know, pause our recording for like 9 seconds and then we keep recording. So I don't experience the musical interjections between us nattering on in the same way that I guess the rest of the world does. So I'm glad that it's useful to someone. Sometimes. Well, like, I'm glad that it's useful when we're taking it seriously and not playing the Allman Brothers.
Also, while we're on the subject, I'd just like to clarify the one other song that I played. I don't think I got any of the information I said about it right. The song that I played last time was by a band called Still Alive. There's a band called Evil Empire that one of the guys came from. The band I was thinking that was on Asian Man was... Forces of Evil. And I don't think I got any of that information correct. So I think maybe 5 podcasts late, I'm setting the record straight on my choice and all the context I gave about it.
Was Forces of Evil a ska punk band that was related to Real Big Fish?
I don't know. Their artwork looks like it could have been the one album cover that I was describing and I can remember. It looks like a Real Big Fish album cover.
Someone fill me in on that. There was a time in my life when Real Big Fish meant a lot to me, so I feel that I should know this. But anyways, John, any more mail before we get rolling here?
That's it. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org.
All right. So
and please do write
in. Yeah, write in. We like that. In the spirit of John playing 10-minute songs that no one wants to listen to, here is a song that is, 1 minute and 40 seconds long. So this is my being merciful to you. So this is a band called Walmart, which is really like the worst name for a band if you ever want to be Googled. They spell it, how do they spell it? WLMRT. They're a noise punk band or a hardcore band, I guess, out of Toronto. They have an EP that came out called Plan B in January of this year that has 6 songs on it. This is 1 minute and 25 seconds. Here we go. So this is not the shortest song on this record. The song is called Crank 2. It is somewhat about coffee, but it is full of righteous anger, which is what you want. So anyways, this is the band Walmart, WLMRT, out of Toronto, with the song Crank 2, and it goes out to John Gentile. Okay, we're back. That was Walmart.
Man, that was a great song, Adam. Great. I really enjoyed listening to that.
I enjoyed listening to the song that we just played as well, which was totally not several seconds. I don't even know. I'm trying to make a time joke and I can't. Hi, I'm Adam. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. We're going to talk about stuff that happened this past week. This one is a little bit of, I guess, industry news, but it is probably relevant because the fate of this particular company would affect a lot of stuff that goes on in the music world here. So it was recently announced among several tech websites, including Ars Technica, which is where we got our info from here, that the audio streaming website SoundCloud has announced that they will be closing their San Francisco and London offices. These closures entail them laying off 173 employees, which is roughly 40% of SoundCloud's total staff. John, by all means, do the math and tell me how many people work for SoundCloud. This news comes as SoundCloud has had difficulties with their revenue stream. They lost a reported $150 million between 2010 and 2015, including $57 million in 2015 alone. So SoundCloud, along with Bandcamp, is a popular site, of course, for independent musicians and record labels and everything else to upload and share music. Places like Punk News, we use it all the time for, you know, embedding music in a web page or something like that. Now, the company has not announced any changes to their service, but this is not good given the overall health of that company, and it does not speak highly of its longevity. So if you are a...
About 422, Adam. About 422.
422. Okay. So...
I did that mentally. What I did is I did 0.4 times N equals 173. Then I divided by 0.4 on both sides. Then I multiplied by 10 on the top and the bottom. Then I simply divided by 4.
That's great. As someone that has to do a fair amount of math in my day job, I try to tune out any and all math that I have to do, not in my day job. So,
Adam, do you use like algebra a lot and even calculus?
I came up with one reason in the past 17 years of being not 17 in the past 12 years of being like a full-time professional computer science person, which is to say I'm a developer. I found one use of calculus in that whole time, and I was very excited when I found the use of it, and I kind of ran around the office and it was like, holy fuck, I have a reason that we could use calculus for something. And then I don't think we actually did. There's a fair amount of algebra that's just sort of inherent in computer science because you're, you know, swapping out a lot of, you know, numeric things for
I feel like I use algebra a lot, honestly, like on a weekly basis.
I every once in a while I will run across like something that genuinely sounds like math when I'm working with computer stuff, and I get very excited about it. And then someone always points out to me that there is some boring shortcut for it, so I don't actually have to do math. And the one that I was really, really excited about just because it sounds cool was if you were trying to calculate the distance between two places on a map, so like between this latitude and longitude and between a different latitude and longitude, there is something that I believe was called the... Hold on. See.
Welcome to the Punk News Podcast, where we discuss math.
Wasn't the law of cosines? It had like the coolest name. Hold on, distance between two points. There's law of cosines. The spherical law of cosines, I guess. Anyways, it's this pretty cool, gnarly looking equation that you can do that involves sines and cosines and things like that to, you know, a bunch of trigonometry stuff to do to figure out the space between or the distance between two points. And I was very excited because I could use it in real life doing that on a website. And then someone pointed out like, oh, there was like a shitty non-trigonometry version that will more or less give you the same answer, at least for the purposes and that you needed it. Like, it's accurate enough. And then I felt really bad because all the cool math that I got to do could just be replaced by not cool math. Hi, this is Adam White. Welcome to the Pumpkins Podcast, where we talk about math. Anyway, so yeah, so SoundCloud laid off a whole bunch of people. So, and the fate of SoundCloud has always sort of been up in the air. I mean, there was talk for a while that Twitter might buy it, and there's been acquisition talk for a while. It's definitely one of those companies that in the sort of modern IT world is not a real. I'm going to say not a real company, in that it's not a company that actually makes money by selling a product or service at a profit. It is one of these companies that exists because rich people have given it money to exist and hopefully one day make more money. It's like venture capital based.
Well, they have a SoundCloud premium.
Sure. They do
have a SoundCloud premium.
So they make some
money, but yeah.
They make
but they don't have
some.
Like advertisements or anything, so it's not really sustainable.
But yeah, so and you can actually look this up because most of this information is public. So like I just looked it up here. So SoundCloud has raised a total of $193 million in six rounds of funding from 10 investors. So they started in 2009 because someone gave them like an undisclosed amount of seed money to get started. And then if you just like look at the way that company's been run, it's pretty bananas. So like April 2009, someone gave them £2.5 million. January 2011, someone gave them $10 million. January 2012, someone invested $50 million. January 2014, someone invested $60 million. January 2016, someone invested $35 million. June 2016, someone invested $70 million. And then May 2016, someone invested $70 million as well. So, like, that's why a company like SoundCloud that, like, to me, there's not a whole hell of a lot going on there. Like, they developed some streaming software, and that is on a website, and then people can kind of log in and upload their own shit. So from my perspective, I'm like, what does SoundCloud really do day to day? Like outside of just kind of like keep the wheels on their software that they have, like what are all these employees doing? And then you look and you see that they have offices in like five different countries and they employ whatever the hell, what did you say, John? Like 400 people?
I believe it, I forgot. I think it was 422. I think was the number.
Yeah, right. So that they employ 420 people. Like, well, you can employ 422 people and have offices all around the world if people have given you $200 million, right? But does SoundCloud actually make money from any of the offerings that they have? I really doubt it that they do at this point. So. You know, what's the longevity of that kind of thing? Very, very hard to say. And that is potentially risky if you're a band or an artist or anything like that, and you're using SoundCloud to kind of host all your shit. You probably want to make sure your things are in multiple places.
Indeed.
Now,
if
we compare that, I don't want to absolve anyone necessarily of stuff here. So let's go look up Bandcamp and compare them. And this is a neat thing to compare when we look at these things here. So if you look at SoundCloud, what did I say? $200 million in funding, which came from six rounds of funding from 10 different investors. And when I say investor, I'm talking about like some big venture capital company, not like a dude.
It could be a dude,
but it's not. If you look at the thing, it's a venture capital. So 400,
I would say,
for 400 employees. If you look up Bandcamp in these same databases, so Bandcamp is listed as of having, when Bandcamp started in December of 2010, an undisclosed amount of funding to start, which I think from these databases perspective means they just started, right, with whatever money the people who built the company put into it. And so they had some undisclosed amount of money to start in 2010, and that's it. And they employ between 1 and 10 people.
I think they employ more than that now.
I'm just looking at the database here, so this is probably wrong. But like the whatever amount they actually employ, it is like an order of magnitude different than what you see out of SoundCloud. And they do have the same service, basically. I mean, from my perspective, more people seem to appreciate and have some affinity for Bandcamp than for SoundCloud. How many people is Bandcamp is a team of 47 people. There you go.
That's probably about right. Yeah.
So Bandcamp is a team of 47 people. That's still way less than 500 people. And if you compare them, so like Bandcamp even says, we're a team of 47. We work in libraries, cafes, co-working spaces, and home offices all over the world. So they're a completely remote company. Everyone is a person that works wherever they work, and they all sort of like remote in and collaborate on what Bandcamp does. That's, again, totally different than SoundCloud having like offices in London and San Francisco and all these other places. Like that's pretty crazy. So if you're looking for one or the other and deciding which one is going to be the best place to host your shit in the long term, I mean, don't let me make your decisions for you, but Bandcamp seems like the one that's potentially not going to be a flaming disaster.
Honestly, I compare it to Facebook and MySpace, although Facebook is morphing, is the reason, in my perspective, the reason Facebook beat MySpace was because it had a cleaner design at the time and also actually offered less options. With MySpace, you could put in GIFs and it would start playing music and all these whacked out backgrounds. And so everyone's page became such a mess, it became unpleasant to visit. Whereas Facebook, not so much now, but then, you know, here's this section, here's this, and everyone's was uniform. And I'm generally against forced uniformity, but in this case, it's what's the consumer took to, and I think that's similar. Bandcamp has an extremely similar design on every single page, whereas SoundCloud is a lot messier. The player is not as doesn't make as much sense. It'll randomly select tracks from other artists once you're done playing. It's too bad because, well, I love Bandcamp. I'm a huge Bandcamp fan, and they also have a thing called Bandcamp Daily where they do excellent interviews, especially with bands called Crystal Fairy, Integrity, and Tal Cross. And you should go look up those interviews because they're done very well. And whoever interviewed those bands did an excellent job at BandcampDaily.com. Anyways, the point being, SoundCloud's messier, and like Adam said, it seems to be a lot more wasteful. I mean, when you think about it, like the core function of Bandcamp and SoundCloud is essentially the same. So it sounds like SoundCloud is wasting a lot of employees' money, if you will, money on employees. But it's too bad because as someone who has put out mixes and radio programs, it's a little bit easier to slide under the radar at SoundCloud. Actually, it's much, much easier to slide under the radar at SoundCloud than it is at Bandcamp, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, so use whatever company allows John to do sneaky internet things. I don't know how much we should really dwell on this and how much more people want to hear me talk about venture capital funding or math on this podcast. But, you know.
Let's pull out the quarterly reports and let's really dive into this thing and get to the bottom. You know?
Yeah, Sean, as a person that is like legitimately in a band, is there any question sort of as to what you guys are going to use, or do you just choose to use both? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really hurt to use both. Bandcamp is definitely a lot like a much bigger process. It's a longer process to getting your stuff up on there, but they're both like pretty simple to use. Especially comparing it to like all the other streaming sites, there's really no hurt in going for both if you want to put your music out there.
Cool. Well, there you go. So, SoundCloud in trouble. That's the long and short of that. So some other stuff has happened this week. Some of it involves actual punk rock bands. So I guess we should talk about those because that's how people tune in here. Bad Cop, the new band that is on Fat Records. They've released a video for their song Womanarchist.
I believe it's Womanarchist. Womanarchist. It's Womanarchist. That's it. Womanarchist.
Yes, that. Anyways, they premiered it over at thebadcopy.com. You can go and check out the video for it on YouTube. The track comes off the upcoming album, or the recent album, I guess, Warriors, which it was one of the new Fat releases this year. So, John, we know that our buddy Ricky Frankel, who's on the show a lot, is a huge Bad Cop fan. He reviewed that record and was quite a fan of it. This is a big kind of centerpiece SoCal punk anthem in my mind. Is it not? Like this is, this feels like this is the band's, you know, this is the band's big call to action, big call to arms.
Yeah, I haven't listened to this entire album, but I've listened to this song and I really like it a lot. I'm going to go back and listen to the rest of the album because I remember Not Sorry didn't really hit me that hard. I always felt like, I don't know, like it just didn't really do much for me, like as far as coming back to it multiple times. But this song's, I feel like it's got a lot more kind of, the word I'm looking for is not grit, but like, I don't know, I guess more of an attitude, to use a cliche. But yeah, I definitely want to check out the rest of this album after listening to this song. And also, it's one of those music videos where you can just try to see how many faces you recognize from around the punk scene, which is always fun. So I like the music video too.
John, any thoughts on this guy?
I do like these videos where you can spot who you like. And if you look closely, he's only in it for about a second. Brian Gorsinger of Nightbirds makes about 1.5 second appearance.
Well, that's reason enough that anyone should look into anything. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I think Bad Cop is cool. It's very slickly produced. It's very pop punk. This has got kind of a Joan Jett vibe to it, I guess. I like this band. It's not my favorite band in the world, but I like them. I like what they're doing. I think they've got a good ear for melody, and I think they're cool. And I think they're doing more good for the world than harm. If only we could all say the same.
Yeah. So, all right, moving on here. John, you want to grab this next story here?
Sure, I will. Yes, the next story is the following. Oh, yeah, this is cool. This is maybe doing more. Is this doing more harm for the world, or this is doing more good for the world than harm? The Screamers. We're going to put them on the spot, Adam White. Sean, who are the Screamers?
To be honest, I don't know much about the Screamers. I know that they were, I know that they were on Fireworks. That's really about it.
Well, at least you're being honest. The Screamers, I know people are just doing it to bug me, and I need to stop talking about the comment section. People in the comment section, we be like, who are the Screamers? Who cares about the Screamers? Honestly, you're an idiot if you don't know know about the Screamers or you don't care about the Screamers. The Screamers are one of the most seminal punk rock bands ever. They might be the first synth punk band. The Screamers were an absolutely phenomenal, absolutely weird, early LA punk band. No guitar, no bass, just two keyboards, a drum, and the singer, Tuumata Duplenty. Of course, on the keyboards was Paul Rosler, famous SST guy, also brother of Kira Rosler of Black Flag. They never put out an album. They actually never put out any official recordings whatsoever, which is too bad, although there are a few seminal videos, including the Target videos, which you have got to watch. Some of the greatest live videos ever. Anyways, so this is just a weird thing that, you know, just, I don't know if there's anything greater to be taken from this, but every year in the United States, of course, you all know, right around the 4th of July, you can buy sketchy fireworks. Sometimes you can buy them at the supermarket. Sometimes you can buy them at fireworks stores. Sometimes you can buy them at creepy roadside stands. And they usually feature like weird pictures on them. Often it's like a bootleg image of Batman and it says like Bang Man on it or something like that. Well, out of some random coincidence or just some, probably just some Google image search, honestly, the Screamers logo appeared on fireworks, except for the firework was called Rebel Yell, and the firework was described as a three-stage whistle cake that will leave you screaming for more, 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 obviously referencing the Billy Idol song Rebel Yell. And so it just goes to show a couple of things, that the interconnectivity of the world, this fairly obscure punk band's logo went to China, got selected to be put on a label, and then made his way back to the United States. Second, I find it amusing that the person confused the Screamer with Billy Idol. And third, I guess Tuumata Duplenty does kind of look a little bit like Billy Idol, if you will. I guess the other question is, will this firework turn anyone on to the Screamers when they see this logo?
Well, I'm definitely going to go listen to them after this podcast.
No one would make that connection. I mean, it's kind of amazing if you go and you look, like, even if you go on Punk News and scroll to like the similar stories thing that runs under the stories and look at, say, like the artwork that was on the Billy Idol Forever Las Vegas show thing, and just the picture of Billy there with his mouth open, screaming, and compare it to the Screamers logo, and they're pretty fucking close. Like, and I know it's a complete coincidence, right? But it's kind of uncanny.
It is uncanny.
So yeah, you know, that there's not much to say about this except like you should go check out the Screamers and try not to blow all the fingers off your hand.
I'd love to get one of these fireworks, but I mean, I'm sure they're long gone. And also, it is kind of annoying how rampant bootleg crap is in America. I mean, it's worse in other countries, but the border control just doesn't seem to give a shit. You know, they really don't seem to give a shit. They could do a much better job with bootleg stuff, much better job against fighting drugs, and they just don't. You know.
But, so you're saying that instead of training your border control people to find
AK-47.
You know, people trying to traffic in humans or try to bring weapons into the country or anything like that. They should be more adept at quickly recognizing misuses of early LA punk iconography.
What I'm saying, with our surplus of funds in the United States, they should pay me to inspect items coming to the United States for punk logo copyright infringement.
Well, we'll see if we can get Donnie to set that up for you.
Listen, if Donald Trump can be president, I can be the punk rock logo inspector. Can I, Adam? I mean, come on.
Is Billy Idol's representation aware of this as well?
Well, good question. Actually, that raises several issues. Of course, where does the name Rebel Yell come from? Does anybody know?
Billy Idol album.
Rebel Yell. Rebel Yell was the name of a whiskey that Keith Richards was drinking on the Tattoo You tour, and Billy Idol was just hanging out with him on one of the show dates, and Keith Richards gave Billy Idol the bottle of Rebel Yell, and Billy Idol was drinking. He says, wow, I can write a song off this. Can I use it? And Keith Richards says he didn't care. And so the song titled Rebel Yell,
which is a great Keith Richards answer.
So the question is this infringing on Billy Idol? Because this is not a song, it's a firework. And so does the whiskey company have a claim against this? Does Billy Idol, you know?
John, you should, whatever lawyering you do in real life, you should just, you know, stop that and chase this file.
I have done stuff sort of similar to this. I've gone after jewelry companies related to punk rock, honestly. So I would do this. The problem is I wouldn't do this because you'll never get any money ever. The best you could hope to do is destroy the fireworks, which would probably be the most incredible destruction of bootleg materials ever, to tell you the truth.
Or you can make a documentary out of it. You chase it down and make a documentary.
Actually, that would actually be kind of cool. That would be cool to me and no one else. A documentary made just for me.
So now I'd have to watch it.
That's true. That's true. Adam, will you watch our documentary on the Rebel Yell Screamers bootleg firework?
I mean, I will at the very least add it to my YouTube to watch queue.
That's all we can ask. Let's talk about another John story here. Ariel Pink. He released another track. It's the second track from his upcoming album. The track is called Dedicated to, I'm sorry. The song is called Time to Live. It's off the upcoming album Dedicated to Bobby Jameson. That's out September 15. Via a different label than last time. Last time he was on, what's that goth label? 4AD. But this time he's going to be on Mexican Summer, which I think is a slightly smaller label. It follows his album from 2015 called Pom Pom, which I thought was an incredible album. And it's probably one of my ten favorite albums of the past 10 years, or close to it. Pom Pom was an amazing album. I thought his new album wasn't going to be as good because Pom Pom is such an intricate work. It's 17 tracks, but it's really like 30 songs crammed into those 17 tracks. These tracks seem to be not as multifaceted. I thought the first track released was all right. I thought this track was really cool because it's weird, it morphs, and it changes. I think Ariel Pink is one of the neatest guys in indie and just weird music that's kind of based in rock still. Adam and Sean, did you guys think this was cool, or did you guys think this was corny indie music? I thought it was cool.
I thought it was cool. I don't think I would like listen to it outside of preparing for the show, to be completely honest. But I did think it was cool, and I did think it was interesting. Yeah, to be honest, I'm not too compelled to listen to the rest of the album, but it was an interesting experience.
I thought this was neat. I don't know if I've listened to much of this before, despite your insistence on posting about Ariel Pink and infuriating the people who comment under your stories, John. But this was neat to me. Little bit of almost a little bit of like pill like post punk wackiness happening in this one. I thought this was kind of a cool track, so I'm down to actually go back and check this out. I think that partly the problem with Ariel Pink, and maybe this is a problem you John Gentile personally could correct, is that the photograph we run with the stories is obnoxious, and 80% of the pushback about talking about Ariel Pink on Punk News is related to that. So swap out that photo and your whole world will change.
Well, but I mean, isn't punk rock kind of about being obnoxious and challenging norms? He's challenging norms. I mean, honestly, if he was just in flannel with a beard standing there, like looking like he was lonely, people would be like, oh, this is so great. I want differences. I don't want uniformity.
I mean, if you look at the picture that Pitchfork ran with the story announcing this song, he sort of looks like a mad scientist, like he's in like the Reanimator or something. So that's
nice reference, Adam.
That works, right?
So why do you think him in steampunk gear is less obnoxious than him wearing a pink shirt with a shark on it?
I'm just trying to help you with all your conflict. I don't have a reason.
Listen, I'm not trying to convert people. Listen, what's that thing? You know, 90% of people are oblivious, 5% know but don't care, and 4% know or something like that. Listen. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. I'll bring the jam to people, but I'm not going to hold their hand. This is punk rock. This is not the safety zone. This is punk rock. I'm here to challenge norms. I'm here to make people feel uncomfortable. And if me and Ariel Pink have to team up to do it, then we're doing it.
All right. I mean, I can't argue with your call to action here. I can only maybe calm you down by someone playing some music. So, Sean, you want to play something?
Yeah. I'm gonna play a song by a band that everybody actually probably already knows, so this isn't anything new, but I just found out that this recording exists. It's a cover by my favorite band of another one of my favorite bands. I just found out it exists and it's incredible. Bomb the Music Industry has a cover of Punk Rock Girl by the Dead Milkmen, and it is insane. It's kind of everything you'd expect from Bomb the Music Industry. They really make it their own. I really love this recording, and I wish I'd found it sooner, so I'm going to play that right now.
One Saturday I took a walk to Zipperhead.
I met a girl there and she almost knocked me dead. Looked at me and smiled and said she did not know.
Sean, do you know that song has a connection to Punk News, a very close connection.
What's
to Punk
the
News?
Connection to Punk News?
Adam, you know The Connection?
Is that on that Split EP?
No, that's on Scott Heisel. That's on Scott Heisel's Wedding Gift. Or not Wedding Gift, Wedding Goodie.
Oh, is it really? Okay.
That's where that's from. Sean, you might not, an old punk news guy is Scott Heisel, who was a member of the early punk news days. When he got married, he had some bands record covers, and he put them on a 7-inch, and if you came to his wedding, you got that 7-inch. That song is off that 7-inch.
Full circle.
All right, we're back. That was Bomb the Music Industry covering the Dead Milkmen. So we had a few more stories to talk about here, at least a handful of them about some older punk rock, so that should be interesting to the Tom Traumas in the room. So first of all, the Dictators NYC, which is the current incarnation of Dictators, which includes Ross the Boss, Handsome Dick Manitoba, LP Patterson, Dean Risper, and Daniel Ray, are changing the name of their band to just Manitoba. The band cites, and this is the quote, legal issues regarding old bandmates, end quote, as the reason for the name change. It is worth noting that over the last few years, founding member and principal songwriter Andy Chernoff has been sparring with Dick Manitoba over the use of the Dictators' name. A few years ago, they were actually barred from performing any of Chernoff's penned Dictators songs. Which I don't even know if you could do that. Like, can you do that?
You can if you sue somebody and the court thinks there's threat. Normally you can't. Normally, if you want to play a cover song at a venue that has paid the license, you can play whatever you want, so long as the venue has paid the public performance license. However, if there's issues with trademark infringement, which there was here, then you can have the court bar somebody else from playing your songs, not due to copyright grounds, but because the audience might be confused to thinking that this band is a different band because they're playing all songs or almost all songs by the other band.
So, I mean, not that I imagine that they want to at this point because he's been a thorn in their side, but could Manitoba perform Andy Chernoff penned Dictators songs now?
Good question. I'd have to see the court order to tell you the truth, but you very well may be correct. Good point. I don't know.
Would they technically just be covers at that point?
Probably not, though, because in the lawsuit, Handsome Dick Manitoba was probably sued as individually as well as the Dictators. So the court order is probably against the Dictators and Handsome Dick Manitoba. You see.
I mean, don't know what much more to say about this one, except that,
Handsome Dick Manitoba showed up in our comment section.
Did he? I didn't see that.
Yeah, here's what he said. I was surprised too, honestly, by this. And I didn't think we were ragging on him because I like both guys. I like Andy Chernoff and I like Handsome Dick Manitoba. So many of the old punk bands, I like the two guys that hate each other, and I'm caught in the middle like a divorced child. Here's what Handsome Dick Manitoba said in the comments section. He said, three men in our band now have spent over 100 years total in a band called The Dictators and The Dictators NYC. But at our age, we would rather just not spend our life fighting. Keep traveling the world, playing shows, and keep making people happy and keep making money. I just wrote 18 songs and I'm ready to put out my first solo album ever. The fantastically talented man John Tyven, while our friends keep the cobweb securely tightened around a 45-year-old band. As I like to say, they win a little battle, but we win the war because here are people that spend their lives making music and they can't get arrested. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but
that's cool.
I'm stoked that he popped by. Yeah. I don't know what point he was making there, but
how often does that happen where like people from bands come into the comment section? Do you see that a lot?
I feel like people on younger bands to which punk news has some sort of reputation with them are probably too cool to pop into punk news at this point and talk about stuff, but a guy in an old band I think is way more likely to, because they're not I don't know, they're not worried about which press outlet is the cool one these days or not, so they'll pop in.
I've had that happen once.
Did I just insult all young bands? I didn't really mean to do that, but you know,
I've had that happen once on a review I wrote, and it was kind of a younger band. But like he was pretty cool about it and stuff. I wrote a review that I didn't think was like super like negative or anything, but like he was like, sorry you didn't like the record, and I was like, oh no, I liked it. And I found that
I've seen that quite a bit. What we'll find is that bands that are still very much sort of like, you know, they haven't made it, quote unquote, whatever that means. Like, you know, like they're a hobby band that have put out a record, but they're not on a huge label. They're not on a huge tour. So doing everything super, super, super DIY. Those are the guys that tend to show up more and get defensive about music criticism. And I feel bad for them all the time because like on the one hand, they really want their stuff covered. And on the other hand, you've got to assume that when your record is reviewed, the best that you can hope for is, you know, some fair criticism and that the person doesn't hate it.
Well, this guy actually
often they can't look past the
well, he took it really well. He actually got into contact with me afterwards and asked for like more in-depth analysis of what they could be doing better. Which I thought was really cool of him.
Oh, see, this is why I was trying to help people not triangulate your location. Because like, what if he shows up outside your house with a van and he's like, hey, come in my van so we can talk about my record and all the criticisms that you have about it.
What's your guys' opinion of that? And that brings up a good
about
point.
Vans? Like,
about vans? Yeah. About artists, I guess, requesting feedback, if you will. There's one perspective in that, oh, I'm interested to see what people have to say. Maybe I can learn from what other people have to say. But then there's the other perspective that's a lot of bands that I like take is like, I don't give a shit what you say, even though a lot of them actually do. But I don't give a shit about what you say. I know what I'm trying to do, and I know if I'm executing it or not. You have no idea what you're talking about. Which is the correct perspective?
Well, I mean, in that one situation that I did have, I felt like it was kind of a weird situation because on the one hand, like, I thought they had like a good thing going for them, and I didn't want to like tell them to completely change their whole sound, because the main problem I had with that record was that, like, you know, it was a bit too similar to the last one, so it's not going to win over any new fans, and that's fine, but just kind of acknowledging that. And so he comes to me and he's asking for like suggestions of what they could do better next time, and I didn't want to like tell them how to run their band. It's kind of a weird situation because on the one hand, like, I mean, my opinions don't really mean all that much. Like, I like writing about stuff, so I think I temporarily suspend that notion so that I can write stuff and I pretend that my opinions hold more weight than they do. But like, when there's a guy coming to me and he's asking for opinions on his record, there's like, I feel like there's a lot of pressure to actually like say something, like not say something that will completely dictate their sound in the wrong direction. I feel like there's somewhat of a power that I don't feel like I should be wielding at that point.
Yeah, I'm never sure what to respond when I'm in those types of situations. If people ask me that, it usually just means like, I'm like, oh no, I don't want to express anything further than what I've written in the review because I don't actually fucking know what I'm talking about. Is probably where I would default to. John, we premiered a song here by an artist called Talay.
Talay
or Tally? Talay? Let's say Talay.
It's Talay. It's Talay. I think her name is Jennifer Talay, but she goes by Talay.
Tell the people about this and why you enjoy it.
I'll tell you, at Punk News, over 2 years ago now, just about 2 years ago, we made the decisive choice. We used to be very protective with what we would premiere. We used to only premiere stuff that we specifically enjoyed or that we thought was right up our audience's alley. And then 2 years ago, we kind of said, why are we doing that? Let's just premiere whatever. If anybody pitches something to us, we'll premiere it, so long as it's not like, you know, Screwdriver or something. And so lately, I mean, for the past 2 years, I've just been putting up whatever people ask me to put up, honestly. And most of the stuff, honestly, I don't dig. Most of the stuff I think is not bad, just not interesting. This I thought was really interesting for two reasons. First of all, this is firmly in the 90s indie alt rock vein. It reminded me of Sonic Youth. It reminded me of Hole. It reminded me of Garbage. And with a lot of young people now, maybe Staff or Sean can speak to this, there's a real renaissance of 90s alt rock going on with people that are like 20 to 24 right now. Adam, were you aware of this?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's
isn't that kind of weird?
It's kind of weird, but like as someone that grew up listening to a lot of that music, like if not actively, but like just as like part of my universe, I can totally see where it's coming from because I think I'm the same age as a lot of those people.
No, you're older than a lot of those people. You're not 20 to 24.
All right, no, I guess I don't know. Maybe I'm the audience. Those people are trying to play to. I feel like a lot of bands that I listen to right now, and yeah, they probably are younger than me, are taking all these kind of like 90s elements one way or another and making new use of them. So as I guess a person that was like listening to a lot of that stuff, just like as that was like what was on the radio when I was that age, I'm kind of down with it. I don't know. It has not yet pissed me off in any serious way. And there's a few bands that I like that people would probably accuse of doing some like 90s revisionism stuff. I mean, like there's a band that I like that I've talked about a lot on this podcast in the past, not too much lately, called Dilly Dally out of Toronto. And
yes.
Right. And like they have this like really grungy thing to their sound that you could totally put into that sort of 90s revisionist boat if you want to say that like, oh, well, they're trying to, you know, they're trying to take all these like, you know, elements of like Mudhoney and Nirvana songs and repurpose them in this way. So, you know, I can't say that I'm against this trend or anything because, hey, I like that band.
Fair enough. The second part is, you don't see this a lot in indie rock or alt rock or however you want to define it. Is I thought this video was hilarious and not like I like goofy hilarious. Like my favorite music videos are probably the goofy funny ones. This is not goofy funny. This is just kind of funny. It's got kind of a Morrissey vibe in that, not that it sounds like Morrissey, but this young lady is singing. She's bringing out an ugly side of herself and she's parading it around and broadcasting it and saying, I'm not ashamed of the ugly side of myself and this is how I feel and I'm not ashamed of it because I know this is how a lot of you feel too, which is a very Morrissey / Smith thing to do. And I just think this video is very funny. I didn't say the name of the song. The song is I Hope Your Band Goes Nowhere, which I think is a hilarious refrain for the song to have.
I thought this was very fun. I don't really know. I don't get a sense too much about what the rest of Tilly's stuff sounds like from this. But hey, this was a fun video. It was a fun song. I'm down.
And that's the only reason I brought
it up. I like the song. I need to go back and check out the video because I've only heard the song. So I'm interested in checking that out. But yeah, I thought it was. I liked it. And I'm probably gonna dig a bit deeper into her discography.
I think the video kind of makes it. It drives poems kind of like some of the sarcasticness that is. Well, I can't talk tonight. that's kind of built into this song. So I think you should go check it out. It's on Punk News right now. If anyone wants to go search for it, I guess we're gonna talk about one more thing here. And this is something that, man, I would love to go to if I was in this neck of the woods.
Yeah, man.
So
these are so cool.
The details for the 2017 edition of the annual Johnny Ramone tribute have been released. So this year's event is going to take place on July 30th. It's going to be at Hollywood Forever. At this thing, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going to happen. I guess we're going to run through some of them. I'll list some, and then, John, you can jump in and list some just so people don't have to listen to me talk for too long here. So, first of all, one of Johnny's favorite films, the film Buffalo 66, will be screened at the event. It's going to be introduced by its director, Vincent Gallo. There's going to be Ramones memorabilia that's on display. This is stuff that was owned by both Johnny and Tommy, and apparently things that have never been publicly exhibited before. There's going to be art that's going on there, art displays by Shepard Fairey, Shepherd Fairey, Lucas David, and Shag. There will be a pop-up gallery from the Morrison Hotel Gallery. And that gallery is going to be DJed by Howie Pyro. In addition, there's going to be a short ceremony there that is also honoring Chris Cornell, who is a friend of Johnny. John, talk about some of the music here.
And honestly, I think this is the coolest thing for me. Steve Jones of the Sex Pistols and Billy Idol. Stafford Sean, trivia time. What relationship does Billy Idol have to the Sex Pistols?
Did he do some sort of production on one of their albums? Oh.
He was their roadie. He was one of the earliest roadies. So Steve Jones and Billy Idol, both of the Sex Pistols, will be doing some acoustic songs, probably about 4 or 5 songs each. Nobody knows for sure, but listen, that's pretty cool. It's a fundraising event for the Johnny and Linda Ramone Foundation, which provides funding for cancer, basically, cancer treatment. If you ask me, this is the way to do it. I mean, honestly, as I've said before, you got to appreciate people while they're alive, because once they're dead, they don't get it. However, also, it's important to remember people and remember their contributions, because even after somebody even after somebody dies, it's amazing how quickly you can forget somebody even after they die. So I think it's great that Linda Ramone, who is one of the two main curators of the Ramone's legacy, along with Mickey Lay, Joey Ramone's brother, I think it's great that she does an annual party and doesn't make it sad, makes it a happy event, and basically appreciates things that Johnny appreciated. And people have fun remembering Johnny, remembering the Ramones, and it's for a good cause. And I just think this is the way to do it. I think this is exactly what Linda Ramone should be doing to promote and continue the legacy of the Ramones.
I was looking at this and thinking to myself, I would never be so presumptuous as to ever do this, but like if you were to like plan your own funeral, you know, to really say, all right, people, here's how I want you to you to celebrate my life when I'm gone. Putting together something like this would be pretty rad, right? You're gonna play my favorite movie. There're gonna be some art that I like. Some guys are gonna come by and play some songs. There'll be a DJ. It's gonna be rad, right? Like you could. It seems like that. Like these, you know, if there's an afterlife, I imagine that Johnny would not be displeased with this kind of thing. Of course.
Good question. He hated to party. Johnny Ramone never ever partied.
Sure, but it's still shit he liked. So I don't know if he'd want to be there and be the center of attention, but like to be like a anonymous person able to peruse these things, I can imagine that he'd be down with that. That said, there's no afterlife and you're all going to rot in the ground forever. What else? Do we have anything else that we're going to talk about?
I think
if you have alternate versions of the afterlife that you believe in, please write podcast@punknews.org and we'll delete them.
Adam White coming down hard on the what's that guy that South Park always makes fun of? Richard Dawkins coming hard on the Richard Dawkins angle.
Oh God, I don't care. Believe what you want. But what are we talking about anymore? Nothing? Are we done? Do we have another song? You have a song. Are you going to play like a 10-minute?
Yeah. I'm going to play the 17-minute version of Allman Brothers' Jessica live on their app. No. Do you guys want to hear The Screamers or do you guys want to hear Billy Idol?
I think you got to play The Screamers because I think that people are somewhat familiar with Billy Idol, but not necessarily the latter. And probably less people are familiar with The Screamers than you would assume.
There's a bootleg of all the Screamers demos. They never released a full album because they were actually planning to make a video album, which hadn't existed at that time, but they broke up before it happened. So there's a bootleg of all their studio sessions. And go on YouTube and just put in Screamers Vertigo and you'll see one of the neatest live performances ever. This is the Screamers doing Vertigo.
Out now.
All right, we're back. That was the Screamers playing Vertigo. We're done. So thank you to Mr. Greg Simpson for producing. Greg, you can take the blame for whatever horrible things John Gentile does on the internet.
I really am amazed that that annoyed that many people. It annoyed people so much they felt the need to write in playing the Allman Brothers.
I'm just amused that people thought it was Greg fucking with us, because we would never make the choice to do something so stupid on our own our own free will.
Now,
so
that means that Greg just kind of has to fuck with this episode somehow. You're just kind of setting him up now.
Don't
encourage him.
Yeah, don't encourage Greg Simpson to do anything. Greg, just calm the fuck down.
Back down, Greg. Back down, man. We can all walk away from this.
This has been a Valor Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@valorundergroundstudios.com.